great to have you with us on the show today. We're talking or turning our attention to Wisconsin's dairy industry and the impact it has on the state's economy. There's been quite a bit of research on this. There's been a report that has looked at its impact, and we'll talk with a couple of guests for you today. One of them, Mark Crave. Mark is one of the founders of Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese in Waterloo. And Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Larry. Glad to be here.
With us as well, Ben Miller, an old friend of mine. We go back a long ways. We worked together in the same department many a year back, but now he has moved on and up, and he's vice president of industry relations for Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Ben, good to see you.
Larry, it's great to see you, and thanks for having us today.
Well, as we talk with Ben and Mark, I hope you'll join in. What do you want to know? How milk or cheese gets from the cow to your fridge, perhaps? Wondering how farmers navigate changing milk prices. Give us your questions about the dairy industry. The number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Mark, let's start with you. We're talking about the industry. I want to hear what dairy farms are like today, and I'm sure a lot of people are as well interested in that on the ground. So give us a little tour of your family farm.
Sure. Well, like every thing in modern society, you know, dairy farms have changed right along with the rest of society. And so today's farm, you know, some of it is the same. We still milk cows every day. We still feed the cows, milk the cows, have baby calves being born, you know, and whether it's 80 degrees or below zero like it was this morning. So we still have those jobs to perform. But really, it's how we do it that's changed. And, you know, over the time, as we've grown farms in size, of course, that's well documented and among people's conversation. And part of the reason those farms have grown in size is economies of scale. And also, in my case, we have I'm one of six current family members. I have three older brothers that are in different phases of retirement, and I have five next generation, so nieces and nephews who work with us. And so we all specialize within that. So one of the opportunities that we have is to try to get better at what we do within our roles on the farm today. We have herds people, we have calf feeders, we have people that grow the crops, maintenance. That everybody shows up every day and just gets that work done.
Yeah, it's a fascinating. What's the key to success for you guys? We're talking about a big family, a lot of people needing to earn an income and live and do something they love to do.
Well, certainly, and you know, I mentioned my family, but we also have a sizable staff, people that choose to drive down our country road every day and make a career on our farm and our cheese factory. And that's one of the things that we're proud of over time. It wasn't so much when I first started farming. You know, I just wanted to be a farmer. I liked the work, and I wanted to have a career in it. But really, I've taken pride over the years of being able to be support our community in the form of jobs and economic impact, which we'll talk about. And so I think one of the main keys with any group of people is communication.
Yeah.
Talking about the right things at the right time. Not confusing a family discussion with a staff discussion. And, you know, you learn over time techniques with that. As I said, I have three older brothers. I'm the youngest of seven children. There was four of us that farmed together. And one of the reasons people say, well, how did four brothers get along? And one of the things I'll share is it's because we wanted to. It was a goal. Just like if you have a goal of losing 20 pounds or, in our case, of growing 200 bushels of corn per acre on your farm, you go about a plan. You do the research, you look into it, and you implement best practices. And my family and I have tried to do that too. Try to implement best practices around how we're gonna manage a family business.
Yeah, Ben, let's turn to you. How much impact does the dairy industry have on our state's economy?
It's a big deal here in Wisconsin, as you know. We just did a report with UW-Madison, the ag department, ag economic department, and we discovered that over the last 5 years, the economic impact went up by 16%. We're over $52.8 billion in terms of the direct and indirect impact on the state's economy. And to put that into some perspective, the entire state budget is about $50 billion or so. Yeah. So this is larger than our entire Wisconsin state budget. It's a really big deal. And another important point, you know, the economic impact went up during the years of COVID. And the country and the world in many ways was shutting down during that time. And this report confirms what we have already known as Wisconsinites, that, you know, we are the dairy state, that our hardworking dairy farm families like Mark weren't shutting down. They were working and milking cows 365, the benefits have paid off here in terms of the growth in the economic impact.
And as I compare, the dairy industry isn't the only ag industry in the state, but I mean, it's the biggest one, Ben, is it not?
Yeah, so the entire ag industry, the report uncovered about $116 billion economic impact, and dairy is half of that. It's a really big deal and continues to be a big deal, a big share of our rural economy.
Jonah in Green Bay has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jonah.
Hi there, Larry. Nice to speak with you.
Well, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So I think it was in 2023, maybe 2022, that Tammy Baldwin had this initiative where she was pushing back against almond milk and cashew milk, or not necessarily pushing back against it, like not recommending to drink it, just trying to keep that kind of milk and cow's milk separate. To the benefit of dairy farmers. And I'm wondering if those efforts in 2023, any of the bills or, you know, initiatives she worked on, if those have had an impact in the past year and a half.
Yeah, it was the term milk, I think, that really came into play here, Ben.
Yeah, well, I can't directly attribute what's happening in the industry to the legislation that the caller is referring to. But I can say dairy is hitting its mark. Cheese demand is through the roof. Butter, yogurt, cottage cheese, all of the dairy products are really back in style, so to speak. We've known the benefits, the nutritional benefits forever, and we're so excited to see that dairy's having this return, this renaissance moment, so to speak. And I think there are many reasons for that. But Mark, what do you think?
I totally agree, and you know, nothing really came of her proposal, even though she has been a great advocate for Wisconsin dairy and for dairy in general, because it was basically caught up in regulation and government red tape. And so, you know, as farmers, we can't spend much time in red tape. And so we just keep making good products. And to Ben's point is people are finding what they're looking for. You know, I think a lot of those artificial products were trendy. It was a trend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are also looking for, alongside that, clean label. Well, dairy has clean label, right? Mm-hmm. Very few ingredients. And I would go as to say, you know, in my household, we're not even allowed to call that milk. You know, I went to a coffee shop one day and the barista asked what kind of milk I wanted in my coffee. And my wife was standing next to me, and she looked up at me with wide eyes and says, uh-oh, where's this going? So I had to educate the young man that two of the three options weren't really milk.
Oh, my gosh. Ben Miller from Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. He's vice president of industry relations. Mark Crave is one of the founders of Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese in Waterloo. It's great to have both of them with us. And again, you can join in with your questions about the dairy industry at 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. Many people probably think of dairy farming as something that strictly kind of affects the rural economy, Ben, but what impact does it have on urban economies?
Yeah, I mean, as part of this report, you know, we were able to identify the cluster effect of dairy. It's truly an integrated supply chain It's not just the hard work that's happening on the farm, but all of the services and the equipment and the other businesses that are connected to that farm that trickle throughout the entire state. So it really is one of these rare industries in Wisconsin and in the country where you have that cluster that benefits span rural and urban economies. And we expect that to continue moving forward.
And so you've got the farm, the sort of the farm economy part of it, but then there's the industrials, if you will, industrial side of things.
Yeah, I mean, all of the equipment that, I mean, Mark can speak to this, the supplies that go on, that go in the plant, right, that get used on the farm, the steel, the specialized equipment where that's getting produced and processed is coming from all parts of the state and the country. So, Mark, you could probably talk more about how that is an integrated system.
Well, sure, there's that, and there's, you know, on the farm side, we even have talk about the feed. You know, the largest input in any livestock industry is feed, and one of the things that we're conscious of, Larry, is we did just quick, you know, napkin math one day, and we figured about 90% of our expenses on our dairy farm are spent within a 50-mile radius of the farm. So it's very local. It when we say it benefits the local economy, that's the truth. And then, of course, there's jobs. And when the milk goes down the road to a processing plant, of course, those there again are more jobs. And their expense, their checks go back to the farm. And so it really is an integrated system. And then eventually that cheese, butter, milk does get to a consumer who pays their hard-earned money for it, and then eventually that works its way back to the farm. So we need all aspects of it for us to stay on the land, to stay on the farm, and support our local economies.
Actually, John had an email from wondering about the supply chain. From the time the cow is milked to the time it reaches the grocery store as milk or cheese.
Yeah, I can't speak to every thing, but I would say a lot of it certainly is less than a week. No milk stays on the farm for more than 2 days. Specifically to our own farmstead cheese, we milk the cows. The cows that are getting milked right now, as we speak, that milk will be piped over to our cheese factory tomorrow or tonight overnight around midnight, and by tomorrow morning that will be going into the vats to make cheese. So we make all fresh cheeses, so it's very fresh, and of course it's refrigerated. It's perishable, just like the milk jug you put in your refrigerator at home. You know, time is of the essence, and so we have a great infrastructure built here. And oftentimes the unsung hero in this too is our milk haulers. Our milk haulers that also work 7 days a week, collecting the milk and getting it to the processing plant.
Don in Bayfield has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Don.
Hello, Don here. Say, I'm kind of wondering about all the farm workers who are immigrants. How is that going to affect their lives, their society, when the chosen one kicks them all out of the country?
Well,
let me start.
Go ahead and start, Ben.
And I want to be clear. You know, we as dairy farmers of Wisconsin, you know, we're explicitly prohibited from lobbying, and we're primarily the promotion arm for Wisconsin's dairy industry. But we know that this topic is one that's important, not just to dairy, but to all of agriculture and other parts of our economy as well. We know that, you know, our farmers and dairy processors are alike are facing challenges and filling shifts and jobs. And I'm sure Mark can speak to that. You know, we're monitoring it closely because it does have such a large impact on our dairy farms here in Wisconsin. Like I said, you know, many organizations here in the state are working to modify the system, make it more reflective of what's happening, you know, and what the needs are in the industry. But like I said, we aren't allowed to weigh in on that. But I don't know, Mark, if there's anything else you want to say about it.
You know, not much. You know, it's certainly we're aware of it, as you stated. And as farmers, we deal with a lot of uncontrollables. First and foremost, the weather. Then we're dealing with livestock, and also people. And so there's a lot of unpredictability and all that. And so we know that when we get up in the morning and we just make the decisions every day that we need to do to get our work done.
Ben Miller and Mark Crave, our guest today. Ben is with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. He's Vice President of Industry Relations. Mark Crave, one of the founders of Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese in Waterloo. I'm Larry Miller. Questions for our two guys about the dairy industry? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Miller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News as we take a look at the dairy industry today with our guest Ben Miller from Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and Mark Crave, who is one of the founders of Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese in Waterloo. Lots of callers coming online. The number to call for you is 800-642-1234. Or, of course, you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Tell us a little about the current dairy consumption trends, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, we're like I was saying earlier in the show, we're having our moment here, and consumer demand is really through the roof. Some of our processors are struggling, you know, to meet that demand, specifically in such areas as cottage cheese and yogurt. You know, really, really explosion of growth. Wisconsin, not many folks know this, but, you know, we're the number one specialty cheese producer in the country. And there continues to be an outstanding demand for those high quality award winning cheeses.
Yeah.
You know, Wisconsin is annually awarded more than any other state or country. And, you know, we know that dairy provides just a powerful pack of nutrients, all of the products. And it is exciting to see our consumers going back to the store for those types of products that will meet their dietary needs.
Gene in Lafarge has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Gene.
Hey, Larry. I'm a large old veterinarian out of Lafarge, so I work with a lot of dairies. And I work also out west in California and then with nomadic pastoralists in East Africa. And as I'm traveling, I go to these, you know, I pick up my gas and I go in for something quick to drink, and I'm always looking for milk. And there's just so many things to buy that aren't milk. You know, there's like, you know, all these energy drinks and soda pop. And sometimes it's hard just to find regular milk. I am starting to see like milk, like protein drinks. And so I wondered, is there something we can do to promote that more in these little gas stations, even in Wisconsin, but across the state, to promote milk drinks?
Gene, thanks. Ben,
I'll go first. You know, Gene, thanks for the call. I want to give a shout out to our friends at the Center for Dairy Research here at UW-Madison. They are partners of ours. The Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin have invested and, in fact, helped create the Center for Dairy Research here, which is a world-class facility. We just had our board meeting over there a couple of weeks ago and learned about some of the new products that the experts are working on, extended shelf life, snacks, grab and grow, you know, that will be sort of meeting the consumer demand for protein primarily, but also, you know, moving a lot of product for us. So, Mark, you were there, so maybe you want to say a few
words. Well, I was. And, you know, to Gene's point, fluid milk consumption has dropped throughout the United States over the last 20, 25 years. People's eating habits change. You know, the old traditional gallon jug in the middle of the dinner table at night isn't as common as it was around the table. On the table I grew up around. And but as we also say in Wisconsin, we don't necessarily drink our milk, we eat it. So while we've seen fluid milk consumption go down, we've seen dairy consumption per capita go up in the form of cheese, yogurt, cottage cheese, you know, so many, butter has had a resurgence. And so while it can be frustrating to find that fluid milk, that's going to change too, because number one, we've already seen, just last year was the first year in like 20 some years that we actually saw fluid milk consumption increase. from the previous year. So hopefully we've hit bottom and we're on our way back up. Secondly, as Ben mentioned, the Center for Dairy Research right here on the UW campus just went through over a $70 million renovation in Babcock Hall. And the whole third floor of that facility is geared towards soft products and beverages. And so just watch. Within the next few years, we're going to see some fantastic new products come out of that facility that companies will be working in conjunction with the Center for Dairy Research and the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin to develop new beverages.
Yeah. Excellent. Gene, I think you had another question as well.
Yeah, I was curious. So we're talking a lot about cattle. And what about, I work with a couple of producers with both dairy goats and dairy sheep. I think we're number one as far as goats are in the U.S. I wonder if you can share a little bit about sheep and goat dairy as well.
Yeah, I can't share much. Obviously, on my dairy farm, we milk Holstein cows. And the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin are funded by people that milk cows by and so the sheep and the goats, while they certainly play a part in the dairy industry, the organization that Ben works for and that I'm on the board for don't represent that.
Another email: how are milk prices determined? That's a big story.
There might be some courses here you want to get in on.
The prices are a complicated formula that flows through the USDA, and it is market data based on supply and demand and what consumers are paying and what processors are paying, and it goes through a convoluted scheme of numbers, and in the end they come up with a price, and then there's premiums put on from each individual farm. So milk is milk. When you buy a 2% jug in the store, it's 2% milk fat. Of course, cows produce a lot more milk fat than that. And so every farm has different levels, different quality levels of butter fat, protein, other solids. And so then it's adjusted for that. So it's a complicated formula. But the one interesting thing that most callers, I think it would be interesting and is novel, that the milk. So today we're in late February. Our milk price for the milk we're producing today, we won't find out until mid-March. So we go to work every day, 7 days a week, milking cows, morning, noon, and night. And we don't know what that product is going to be worth for as long as 45 days. And so that shows you the complexity to it. And that's as far as I can get into it without a PhD thesis on it.
It is a quite a complicated story for sure.
Absolutely.
I can remember some of my school days back, even back when I was a student. The system of described to me at the time, I thought, of how milk prices are determined was...
Well, to show you the complexity of it, they just, they're called the Federal Milk Marketing Orders, so there's different orders around the country. They just revamped those after a qualifying time period, had hearings for 49 days. They took testimony for 49 days on changing the Federal Milk Marketing Orders, and I attended zero of them.
Mark in Wisconsin Rapids has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Just came back from visiting my son in Fort Collins, Colorado, and had an opportunity to go through a local dairy there. I think it was Miller Dairy. I'm not sure. But one of the things I thought was really interesting was they're allied with a company called Noosa, which makes yogurt. It's an Australian yogurt. Probably the best yogurt I've ever had. It's a thicker yogurt, and it typically has fruit mixed. But one of the things I really enjoy about the dairy is after the tour through the dairy, and they have a circular parlor, is the flavored milks that they had. And I've tasted some flavored milk at the Wisconsin State Fair, but I don't see anything regularly on the shelf. But they had lemon milk and strawberry milk and chocolate milk and just a whole host of different flavors. And I thought, wow, this is great. I mean, you want a protein source that kids might really enjoy is more flavored milk on the shelves in Wisconsin. So that's just my comment, and encourage Wisconsin's dairy industry to do a whole lot more than what they are to encourage people to drink milk, which is a great source of protein and calcium. I'm a milk drinker my whole life. I'm 78 years old, so
Mark, I thank you very much for calling. So let's turn to another Mark. Mark Crave here for a comment.
Sure. Well, thanks for being such a dedicated milk drinker. And what we're trying to do at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin is build that habit like you have, Mark, from an early onset. So it's very fitting that March Madness is coming up. And the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin are one of the major contributors to broadcasting the WIAA boys and girls basketball, wrestling, I think even, football. So throughout the school year, and along with that, we're promoting flavored milk, chocolate milk, as a sports recovery drink. And so we're making a lot of headway with research that's been done that farmers have funded, and also getting that milk in front of those student athletes. And as you can imagine, after a sporting event, they just devour it. That milk disappears in one flick of the wrist.
Mark, we need to get you on staff at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. You're a great ambassador for dairy.
Well, here's another Mark. This one from Appleton. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. I was wondering, out of all the milk that's produced in Wisconsin, how much of it stays here? Are we exporting any? And are we importing any? And how far away do we import if we are?
Great.
Ben.
Yeah, great question. You know, very few folks know this, but 90% of the milk produced here in the state gets turned into cheese. So as Mark Crave here mentioned, you know, we like to eat our milk here. And 90% of the cheese is exported beyond the boundaries of Wisconsin. And so you can see why we spend a lot of our effort and time on promotion of cheese. You can find Wisconsin cheese in 99% of the grocery stores in America. That's how much cheese gets exported out of the state. And I think it's a testament to Mark and his fellow dairy farmers from across the state to get that product out.
Mark, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. Number's 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. Here's an interesting question. An email from Cassandra. Can a bovine grow to over 1,000 pounds from consuming only grass, water, and salt blocks?
Yes. Yes, they can. You know, I don't know what makes 1,000 pounds the magic number. Typically, a modern Holstein cow will weigh anywhere from around 1,400 pounds when she has her first calf. And we have cows that will get up over a ton. They'll be over 2,000 pounds. A mature cow that's grown and developed. Yeah. But we feed them a lot more than just water, grass, and salt. We certainly, you know, we all have nutritional needs, including those of us, you know, listening today, that require more mineral balance and a balanced ration. And so while grass is a great feedstuff for a cow, there's other nutrients that we bring in and other feeds on our farm to meet that cow's entire nutrient profile needs.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Another question about how do milk prices affect an individual dairy farmer as they...
Well, they have huge effect. You know, the milk is a commodity, just like corn, soybeans, crude oil. It's a commodity, and so it really reacts to the supply and demand equation, Econ 101, and that certainly comes right back to our farm. And so one of the things that farmers are adept to, as I mentioned earlier, we always don't know the price ahead of time. We plan. We manage our farms because we know, you know, low prices will eventually go up and high prices will eventually come down. And so it does take a lot of financial management. I guess the greater question is, you know, just we have a lot more complexity around managing the finances on a farm. Of course, those barns are expensive. Machinery is expensive. Land always goes up in value. And so we have a huge amount of investment on our farm before we ever milk a cow. And so, you know, the model of the 1950s where the farmer would have one checkbook in the, you know, on the top of the refrigerator in the farmhouse, and the milk check would go in there, and they'd write the expenses out of it, right along with new shoes and dental bills for the kids. You know, those days are long gone.
Yeah. Yeah, and the industry prices, they fluctuate a lot, and if they're up 1 year, they're down the next, and back and forth. Sometimes though, if you get an extended low point, that is where I think it gets difficult for a lot of farmers.
Yeah, one good thing I'll chime in a little bit is the recent investments that are happening across the country in processing capability. So we're aware of maybe $8 billion in planned investment in new processing plants across the country. That's a good sign that the market will remain strong for dairy for years to come. And that's not to say that there will be fluctuations and good months and tough months, but the long-term trajectory looks really strong.
Well, and here in Wisconsin, that's one of the reasons for the emphasis behind our specialty cheese movement, is those typically tend to be higher value cheeses. They sell for a higher retail price in the store. And with all things being right, we can hopefully get some of those dollars back to the farm gate. And of course, there's a lot of people in between, but that's the whole thing. And as Ben said earlier, that 90-90, where 90% of our cheese leaves the state, and hopefully over time. But, you know, there will be days that the milk price is below our cost of production. One of the bigger challenges over time, I've been doing this since 1988 when I graduated from the UW here, and one of the bigger challenges I've found over that time period is keeping up with inflation. It's not so much the prices go up and down, but over time, are we keeping up? Because our expenses go up just like everybody else, and we need to be able to keep up with inflation. So if we see more, you know, there's a lot of news around what products cost in the store, and I would argue that they probably haven't even been, while they are more, and I understand that, and I can sympathize with people. We all have to meet a budget, but those prices today are still very reasonable, and the American consumer enjoys the lowest cost of food as part of their expendable income as anywhere in the world.
Tom in Baraboo has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hey. Years ago, I don't know if it's still going like this, that Florida had a big milk producing in California and Wisconsin, of course. They used to be paid in different, their price of milk gauges were different. Like Wisconsin got paid a different price than Florida. And California got different paid. If that's still going, I mean, I'll give them that they got the best oranges, but not the best milk.
we love their oranges. So in many ways, you know, I'm far from an expert, but in a previous life, I worked in Washington, D.C., and worked on a farm bill or a couple of farm bills where there were discussions about, you know, reforms to the pricing system. And the order system that Mark just referenced is in some ways still based on this cost of production model, where originally it was identified as Eau Claire, Wisconsin was sort of the epicenter, right? That was that was the best place or the most efficient, you know, for a variety of reasons. It's not quite clear to me, but all milk prices were based on how far you were from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Is this right, Larry? You know about this.
Yeah.
They threw a dart at a map and it hit Eau Claire.
It could be. But in so many ways, you know, over the years, the order system has sort of just amended that. It hasn't really destroyed it entirely. And so this complicated structure that we have in place right now, as Mark mentioned, is really hard for folks to figure out. But from a farmer perspective, Mark,
and Ben, the real difference really is what the milk is used for. So in Florida, for example, just about all that milk would be used for fluid milk. Of course, there's a lot of people that live in the southeast United States. There's not nearly as many cows. There's cows there, but not nearly as many here. And so they're often at a deficit of milk. So they use the fluid there. Of course, it's close, it's fresh. Compared to Wisconsin, we make cheese, so we can ship that around the country and around the world. So that's really what drives the differences in prices, is what product does that milk end up being used in?
Yeah, makes sense. Dot in Manitowoc has a different question. Hi, Dot.
Good afternoon. And I am curious, when the farmer puts the seed into the pasture for the cows to graze, what type of seed do they put into the ground?
Well, the type of seed depends on what crop we're growing, right? So there's, in the case of a pasture, for seeding a pasture, we're probably putting a mix in. So we don't want to, because different species of plants have different water needs, different heat tolerances. Some will do better on different types of soil. So oftentimes that seed would be a mix of four or five or six different species. And then also in addition to that, we grow alfalfa. So we'll plant about a third of our acres on my farm are seeded to alfalfa. And of course, that's a 3-year seeding. So every year we're doing about one third of those acres. We're putting in new seeding and the other third will come out and then we'll plant corn on that crop. So one of the things that's it's as old as mankind itself is crop rotations. Right, Larry?
Yeah.
And I think the ancient Egyptians, you know, in the Nile Valley, I think, discovered crop rotation. And we're still using those techniques today, knowing that by rotating those crops on different fields, we're suppressing parasites and weeds and the nutrients that are in the soil. And so we're still doing that. Modern agriculture uses more complex ways of getting there, but we're still using those techniques that go way back to biblical times.
And Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but the vast majority of Wisconsin dairy farmers are growing their own feed, right?
Yes, certainly the forage. So forage is the long, shaggy feed that ruminants need, you know, the salad bar, and so we're growing that on our farms, and then we'll also purchase supplements to balance that, to the previous caller, to balance what that cow needs. Every day we know what the cow needs: certain amount of energy, protein, fiber, digestible fiber, bypass energy, and ruminants are complicated systems, but that's one of the things that makes the dairy cow such a blessing, is that she can take and consume and use feeds and foods that you and I can't digest. A ruminant can digest that, and a dairy cow then in turn, and then of course the sheep and the goats, they'll give us milk and meat and all the other great products. So yeah, they're really a marvel. One of the interesting things that a lot of people and callers might not know is livestock agriculture consumes a lot of what we call byproduct feeds or co-products from foods that humans eat. So when you think of it, everything we eat as humans has a rusk, a hind, a core, a peel, something before we get it on our dinner plate, right?
Yeah.
And when those processes are done in a facility, before we even get that bag of flour, before we even get that lemonade, Those co-products ended up somewhere, and in many cases, those end up locally because, of course, there's a cost of hauling, and ruminants can digest those and make milk. So in our case, we use brewer's grain from Milwaukee, comes from the brewery. It's the mash that's left after they start the beer making process. We will feed distiller's grains. We'll feed cottonseed. We'll feed malt sprouts, local things. I know farmers in the northern part of the state that will feed pizza crusts from a pizza factory that were rejects. If I were in California, I would feed almond hulls and citrus pulp.
Yeah.
And just on our farm alone, Crave Brothers Farm alone, just one dairy farm of the 6,000 in the state, we use over 10,000 tons a year of byproduct feeds. And
wow,
it's very high nutrition. The cows benefit from it. Some of it they really like. And we'll mix it with our homegrown forages and homegrown corn, and we blend it up into a total mixed ration, and they consume that, and they get their nutritional needs.
Wow. Mark Crave, one of the founders of Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese in Waterloo, and Ben Miller with us as well from the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. He's Vice President of Industry Relations. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.
taking a look at the dairy industry on the program today with Ben Miller from Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and Mark Crave, founder, one of the founders of Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese. It's great to have them with us. Again, you can join 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. Shirley in Green Bay emailed, did you see the feature film, the recent feature film, Green and Gold? And if so, how did you feel about how small family farms were portrayed in that movie?
Yeah, I know it's gotten a lot of coverage. It's on my list. I haven't seen it, but Mark, have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't, and I meant to. I was wondering if someone would ask about it. No, I'm looking forward to seeing it, though.
I interviewed the guys that put the movie together and watched it. It was a very, very interesting film, and really a lot of fun. And I know at least in Janesville, I think they had to extend the amount of time the film could be shown because there was a lot of interest.
That's great.
In it. Although the farm itself, I mean, it was plowing with a horse.
Yeah.
It was, you know, a guy who had the did not want to give up on the less mechanization, kind of the better.
Yeah, but. Yeah, and that was also in the 90s, right? So that's a long time ago already, believe it or not. So yeah, when we certainly weren't farming with horses in the 90s either, though.
No, well, back even further back when I was a kid, and I was on a farm and grew up on a farm until into my teenage years, and we had back then milk 60 head of cattle. We also had chickens. We had some pigs, but the main was, and we had 320 acres. And that was considered, at least in our neighborhood in southern Wisconsin, to be a pretty big farm.
Yeah. I mean, 20 years ago, the average herd was 75. That's only 20 years ago. Not that long ago. And right. And today, I think it's, what, 200 maybe?
I think it is around that, yes.
Yeah, that's the average size of the Wisconsin herd.
And the percentage of family farms in Wisconsin is still very...
Yeah, 99%.
Yeah, still in the high 90s, yeah. Family-owned.
Family-owned farms.
Yes.
99% of them in Wisconsin are family-owned. So there you go. And Rod called. He didn't want to stay. Couldn't stay with us. But he just mentioned whey products, commonly used in drinks now. That's actually a waste product from milk creation, but a good idea because it's got a lot of protein.
It does, and actually, it's used in more and more products all the time. And I mentioned earlier the Center for Dairy Research that some of what they're doing is looking at ways to make better use of that whey. And also, you know, the whey right off the cheese vat is a high concentration of liquid. So they're looking at ways to kind of reduce the amount of liquid so it's not so expensive to deal with. But it certainly adds a part to our milk check, you know, the dried whey powders.
And to go along with something you mentioned earlier, Brenda called and also couldn't stay with us. But she was living in the Middle East years ago and... went to the grocery store, and there was Wisconsin cheese.
Beautiful.
She remembers cheddar cheese was there. She said it was expensive there, but she got it anyway.
That's great to hear.
Oh, man. Randy emailed us. Randy's recently been hearing a lot about raw milk. And do you have any comments or thoughts on raw milk? Some people think it's been improperly demonized. What exactly is the difference between between organic and not organic milk? So we got raw milk and we got organic.
Yeah, I mean, let me start with raw milk, and I'll be pretty direct and clear on this. Now, not a good idea. Pasteurization is something that for 100+ years we have taken for granted. And it's almost, Mark, you and I talked about this a few weeks ago. You know, when something has been around that long, you sort of forget about it. It just sort of goes without saying. And I think about the benefits and the safety that it provides for us to have a really safe and nutritious product on our shelves, and we feed our families. But we do take it for granted, right, Mark? And this discussion around raw milk, I think, brings it back into focus about the importance of pasteurization and what it does, and how dangerous raw milk can be. It can kill you. And we know of cases where people get really, really sick. Another interesting thing that we discovered was something like 70% of people who purchase raw milk will actually take it home and heat it before they consume it. You know, we do that for you. So go ahead.
Well, and two things on that. As consumers, 50 or 100 years ago, people grew up with a whole different microbiome in their gut, right? Kids were playing outside. They were playing with pets. They were from bigger families. And they could maybe eat something that disagreed with them a little bit, but they didn't get sick from it. Now we live in such a sterile environment. We have handy wipes. We have wet wipes. We have hand sanitizers on every doorway. And so a lot of us don't have that microbiome in our gut to where if we did ingest a pathogen, we would probably get very sick instead of just maybe being under the weather for a few hours. The second part of that is I saw an interesting statistic, but only about 2% of foodborne illnesses are dairy related, but of those, 70% are linked to raw milk.
Oh.
So that's what the opposition from the dairy industry is towards raw milk is what we're doing with pasteurization makes milk dairy products extremely safe. But when we go to the raw milk version, then we're really opening up a lot of opportunity for
problems.
To happen.
Yeah. Colleen emailed us, how do you educate students to dairy farming as possible career choices?
That's great. You know, Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, we take this part of our job very seriously and do a lot of on-farm. We partner with Mark and other farmers across the state with hosting students for tours, school groups that come through. June Dairy Month is, you know, Larry, you go across the state, there are farm families hosting groups in every county across the state to educate and build awareness and visibility. And we partner with other organizations. This is not just a Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin opportunity, but for all of Wisconsin agriculture, there's so many programs, so many initiatives to get our youth interested in farming and careers that span, you know, everything from on-farm vet service to you know, you name it. But Mark, maybe you want to talk a little bit about your engagement with youth.
Well, right. And as Ben said, you know, there's a lot of jobs that are linked to the dairy industry that aren't on the farm. And with any career, you know, Larry, you were sharing us your background in radio. Oftentimes it's just an opportunity for a young person and to have the right opportunity, not just work, not just, hey, go do that, but engagement from the farmer, make it a pleasant experience, make it interesting, share the bigger picture. And, you know, my own father, who's no longer with us, grew up in town, grew up in Beloit, and, got a job on the outskirts of town, rode his bike, and worked on a very, very progressive farm at that time, and just loved it. And ended up, when he graduated from high school, came to the University of Wisconsin here, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
So it can happen.
Amazing story for your whole family. I did want to mention that we're going to have another Crave coming and visiting us. Carl, is your...
Nephew.
Nephew.
We're a big family, so you'll find us all over the place.
And he is vice president of operation for Dynamic Renewables, which is a company that specializes in recycling manure from dairy farms.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll be coming up next week on Wednesday. So looking forward to talking with him. And hey, it's been fun talking with you guys.
It's great to see you, Larry.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. Ben Miller, Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin Vice President of Industry Relations, and Mark Crave, one of the founders of Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese. Great to have them with us. And look forward to another time visiting with them. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll cover garden design trends. We'll look at how to grow potatoes. And we'll also talk about soil health. That's all starting at 11 tomorrow
on Garden Talk. And, of course, thanks for joining us today. This and other shows are a team effort. For this show, our producers are Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod. Our technical directors are Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. And our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.